If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Refreshing. Welcome to this completely unnecessary podcast number 165 for Tuesday. It's a Tuesday we're doing this again. We just did one. June 18th, 2019. Almost summer. The last springtime CU podcast. That's Ian Ferguson.
Hi.
I'm Pat Contry. We'll be talking about the Mega SD from Terra Onion. Dr. Mario World gets a release date and a trailer / instruction manual. A new NWC found and sold. It was sold. I guess it was sold when it was found. Atari VCS article. That'll be lovely from our friend. Maybe a Tales from the Game Store. A Patreon poll topic. Q&A. Ian, have you been enjoying Cadence of Hyrule?
I have. Yes. I picked that up. immediately when it came out, I really liked the original game, Crypt of the Necrodancer. That they did. That was released in 2015, and it's a roguelike rhythm game. It's a dungeon crawler, but you move through the spaces on the beat. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. And it brings up it increases an attack multiplier. So the original game that they did, Crypt of the Necrodancer, was just that. It was, you know, it was a randomized dungeon crawler, and there was lots of different stuff you could get and find and do. Cadence of Hyrule is fairly remarkable in how it does more than that, but also the fact that Nintendo gave their property to an indie game company, a Canadian indie game company.
Okay.
I mean, they've never done that before.
Well, they've licensed Zelda.
Yes, not to an indie, I know, but not an indie game company. The people they licensed it to were bigger. It was like Capcom or Philips at the time.
Okay. That worked out. Philips worked.
Yeah, that worked out great. So basically they take the concept of Crypt of the Necrodancer and they put it in a top-down Zelda. You can play as either Link or Zelda. And you explore an overworld and dungeons like you would in a normal Zelda game. But when there's enemies on screen, the rhythm part takes over, and that's how you fight all the enemies. Okay. And then when it's not, you can just move around like you would in a typical mystery dungeon roguelike game. You can actually turn the rhythm mode off completely if you don't want to deal with the rhythm game aspect of it.
Just play it,
and you can just play it as a turn-based dungeon crawler, basically one of those dungeon crawlers where you move, they move, you move, they
okay.
move, you move.
One space at
move.
A time.
Yeah, one
okay.
space at a time. Because that's more or less how the game plays out when you're playing it with the rhythm mode on. It's every beat is a turn. You can choose to skip one if you want, but every beat is a move on the map. It's neat. There's all the traditional Zelda bosses are in it. You know, the multi-headed dragon is there, only this time it has, like, glockenspiel armor and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's really neat, and it's hard. It's not, like, crazy long, it doesn't seem like.
This review says 5 hours.
But given the fact that a lot of that stuff is randomly shuffled up every time you start a new game, you can play it.
It's roguelite.
You can play it multiple times.
Well, that's pretty cool. Someone, like, a mob when throws a spear is one space at a time. That goes
yep.
like,
yeah.
So you can, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like there's enemies that will throw the spears and they will, like, you'll see the target on the ground, so you know you can get out of the way in time. It's really cool. All the different enemies have different patterns and stuff to learn. The soundtrack by Danny Baranowski or Baranowski. Is it with an F? Baranowski is fantastic. It's really good. I don't listen to video game music outside of video games, like stuff that was actually written for it, but uh-huh. this I would listen to. It's very, very good. So, yeah, that anyways, that's what I've been doing, is playing that.
And the graphic style is like Link to the Past sort of graphic style, 16-bit-ish.
It's 16-bit-ish. It's done. It's done in the Crypt of the NecroDancer style. And
but for a Zelda comparison, Link to the Past would be closest, right?
Any of the overhead ones, yeah.
Okay. Now I'll check it out. Yeah, I'm sure you know Nintendo liked what they did before with their other game. What's the indie company's name? It's
Brace Yourself Games.
Brace Yourself Games. That's a funny one. And so obviously they probably were looking at builds and giving them guidance along the way. They're not just going to put out whatever, and you know. So that's good. It's a change of pace. Eventually, we're gonna get that Zelda racing game. We haven't filled that genre out yet. There, just you know, we'll do that one. And what else is missing from the Zelda games? Zelda Fighter. Smash is not good enough. It's just Zelda people. I want to fight as a. Fight as an Octorok. Why not?
Zelda Tennis, a sequel to Mario Tennis.
Zelda Tennis, there you go. Zelda Golf, fill out the roster. I want to swing as a tech type. I want to swing the club as a tech type. So I don't usually look extremely rested for the podcast in general. Working on a Super Nintendo guidebook late nights. But I haven't shaved, as you've noticed. I usually like to shave the morning up or at least the night before the podcast recently. My hot water heater went Saturday night. We're recording on a Tuesday. Went to take a shower. Usually, the symptoms of no hot water heater or it's, you know, something's wrong. Not a lot of hot water coming out, or it's like lukewarm. Something's going on.
Imagine that.
So I go over to the hot water heater, and then I see there's a basin. First of all, I looked at the temperature thing to make sure it's not some ghost would have put it on low or off. Because I'm an idiot who would have done that. And then I looked at the basin that it's sitting in, and there's water filled up to the top. So it leaked, and when it leaked, you're done. I don't know why a hot water heater leaks. I asked my father for some knowledge on that on Father's Day, and he gave me some BS father answer that, you know, like, Dad, I'm not seven. It's not working.
The only thing I can think of is the steam builds up, and it causes...
The steam builds up?
Steam, yeah.
I don't think it's hot enough in there for there to be steamy.
Well, I think that should be.
It should be. But anyway, so... the bad news in all this affects my NES collection. My Mike Tyson standee was stood up not far enough away so that the hot water heater basin, which is like, we'll say about 5 inches high, the water busted through and damaged the bottom probably 3.5-4 inches of my Mike Tyson punch-out standee. Unfortunately, damaged a relic. It's like an original painting getting spray painted. So on the bottom, white letters, you have that nice brownish water damage on the bottom. So immediately, of course, first things first, what's most important, I blew dry off the Mike Tyson's punch out of the bottom. So because you don't want the corrugated cardboard to separate in the bottom of it. And it's damaged, but whatever. It's fine. If this was Pat from 5 years ago, I would have went nuts and threw something through the walls. Ian could attest to that. I was like, okay, whatever. So I have home warranty insurance. Not homeowner's insurance, that's different. Homeowner's insurance is like if your roof caves in, something happens, a tree falls on your pet, or you know, if someone slips and falls and they can sue while doing a podcast or something, that's what homeowner's insurance is for. Home warranty insurance is like for like appliances, water heater, dishwasher, your AC, things like that. You know. So I call them up, give them a call. Some you know, and you hear bad things about home warranty insurance usually. It's advertised on TV. It's hit or miss. They try to jerk you around a little bit or not cover things. But, you know, I put in a claim on Saturday. They said, oh, okay, someone's going to call you on Sunday. No one called on Sunday. The contractor didn't call on Sunday. I tried calling the contractor directly. They weren't open. The contractor they assigned, the plumbing people, called me back Monday morning to set up to come on out. And even beforehand, I did my research on the contractor, the plumbing company. I looked up the Yelp reviews. Oh boy, were they not good. Oh, when you see that nice 1.5 out of 5 stars review, it's like, oh, this is going to be something. And what people were saying is, oh, they overcharge for things that aren't needed. And I'm like, okay, now I know what I have going in. I know what to expect. So the guy shows up. He looks at the hot water heater. First I ask, can you just bring a hot water heater with you? Because you can't really repair these. They're like $500-$600. Just replace them. I mean, you can't really repair them. Just replace them. So because it was past, it was like a 10-year-old water heater anyway. So they said, no, we have to diagnose it first. I'm like, oh, here we go. We have to diagnose it. Guy comes out, says, yeah, we got to replace it, but we also have to replace everything around the hot water heater. We have to replace the supply lines, the gas line fitting, some flue pipe, and the drain pan, and something else, tup line. I can't read it. So I expected this. But so I started to question the guy, like, why can't we use what's there? I mean, it's not like it's bad materials. It's not like, you know, the metal supply water line is going to be bad. Why do you have to replace that? They're if anything, you just replace the fitting on the end. I'm not a total idiot when it comes to this stuff. I'm not a handyman, but I know a teeny bit. And he says, no, we just got to replace it. I'm like, okay, this is how they make money. I understand contractors have to make money for the time because the hot water heaters, you know, they're not, I'm not buying that, that's coming from the insurance, but holy shit. So he gave me the prices for everything, and I looked them up. Like the drain pan, I don't know why you need a new drain pan. It's a fucking pan that your furnace sits in. $70 I was quoted. I looked it up at Home Depot for a plastic one, $20. And then the supply lines, you know, he said, oh, we need stainless steel supply lines. And I looked at the ones on top of my water heater. They look pretty stainless steely to me. They didn't look like they were made out of like 50-year-old iron. And so I was quoted $100. Those are about $30 to get those. Again, I understand labor's got to get paid for it some way, but I thought that'd be reimbursed through the home warranty and that I wouldn't be paying this bullshit stuff. So it's going to cost me about $500 to get my hot water heater replaced, which is about what a hot water heater costs. So they got a nice scam worked in where I can't tell them to go fuck themselves and buy my own hot water heater, because then I still have to pay the labor of the plumber to come and install it, which probably be a couple $100. But then again, the plumber probably wouldn't give me the bullshit about you got to replace everything around it, but maybe he would. So they got this figured out, this nice racket, where I'm still saving money, but I'm still getting screwed in the butt at the same time with this home warranty. And again, this isn't the home warranty people, I don't think. This is just the contractor taking advantage of rubes like us and bending us over. So they are the scumbags contractors of the week, but I still need my hot water heater. But you know what, Ian? A bucket bath isn't terrible. Bucket bath, fill up a dollar store bucket. And you know what? I'm going to get a little into water conservation right now. I'm going to use half the bucket when I showered. We only use about probably like two gallons of water, a gallon and a half of water to shower and for our hair, and we're wasting so much water in the shower. But yes, it is nice to feel that hot water in a first world nation come down on you and soothe your achy yoga muscles. But anyway, so be very careful with your home warranty insurance. Not your homeowners, your home warranty insurance. Because you can get stuck like me here, and then and plus they charge, this is always a good sign, when they charge you 3% on top for when you use your credit card to pay. That's what they, on my credit card authorization form, that's what, and I don't know why I got to fill out a credit card authorization form. I never had to do that before with anyone, because usually that's in person. So yeah, not a great company to deal with, and if they fuck with me, I'll ass blast them on the next podcast. So.
All right.
Do you have any experience with home warranty?
No, I do not.
Okay. All right, I'm going to be at too many games. This weekend, I'm leaving tomorrow night. I don't know how it's already upon me. And that's going to be at TooManyGames.com. Well, information at TooManyGames.com in the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center, Oaks, PA, June 21st to 23rd. Come out and see me on my panels on Sunday. I'll be talking about upcoming book. I'll be talking about Not For Resale documentary. I'll be showing a clip from it. Kevin, the director, edited down our 41-minute conversation. It was me, Kelsey from Pink Gorilla, and Frank Cifaldi. We had a 41-minute, basically, conversation free-flowing, and so that's going to be, I think, like a Blu-ray extra, but I'm going to probably show like a 10-minute version of that conversation. We talk about game preservation and physical media, where the future of game collecting is going and all that, and I'll be showing that off. And yeah, you can just say hi and maybe do the Play the Punk Challenge there. And then I'll get to see my parents and my sister then after the event. Nice. And AJ, our pal AJ that I speak about.
Side pocket.
Sociopath side pocket AJ. He actually called me, I think, like an hour before I put the super side pocket review into the work document. So like it was fate. Mm. It was fate. So okay, we're gonna move on with this good old CU podcast that doesn't need a hot water heater.
All right, so we'll come hot out the gate with this announcement. Terra Onion, company, I suppose. never heard of them until yesterday, or 2 days ago. Came out with an item called the Mega SD. The Mega SD is, if it does what it says, this thing is impressive. So it's an FPGA on a cartridge, essentially. This is a flash cart that you can use on your Genesis for not just Genesis ROMs. It'll also do Master System ROMs. It'll do Game Gear ROMs. Okay. But it will also do 32X and Sega CD.
Okay.
That's wild.
Because then at that point, it's not just, you know, ROMs that, like a flash cart, it's now building in coding to order to interpret and add on the functionality of hardware to the Sega Genesis through the cartridge. That's where it's impressive.
Yep. Exactly. So.
And we spoke about them before, by the way.
Did we?
The Super CD System 3.
Oh, that's them? Okay, so they've got some background here. And the Super CD System 3 was well reviewed. So this is, I think it's, my buddy actually ordered one the minute they got put up. I think it's like 285 shipped is what he said it Woo! Is. And I believe they ship in August. But yeah, this is pretty incredible. For the price, you can have, that's a big saving. You know, for a good working condition Sega CD, you're looking at probably about $200 right now.
Well, this is how they advertise it. Really? $200 for a working one? It's gone up?
For maybe not a Model 2. Model 1, though, is definitely about $200.
It used to be about $100, $120, yep, something like that. Not anymore. They advertise it, the ultimate accessory for Genesis/Mega Drive, complete FPGA recreation of the entire Mega CD slash Sega CD hardware into a plug-and-play cartridge. Again, you're basically adding on the hardware on a cartridge, the coding, so to speak. So, plays both ISOs, BIN plus Q, and ROMs. RAM-based cartridge for instant boot. That's good. We don't get that load-up screen. I want the load-up screen. Man, I wanted to hear that if there's a load-up screen. Compatible with all original or region-free patch Mega CD slash Sega CD BIOS. Okay, you probably got to get to supply your own BIOS. Is that what that's saying right there? Supports Mega Drive, Sega CD, Mega CD, Master System, and 32X games. Requires a 32X add-on, though, Ian, it says. So you're going to have to plug this FPGA cart into the 32X. So it's not actually coding that in entirely. Looks like compatible with the analog Mega SG. That's good. Save states, so you get all the emulation stuff, emulation qualities you want. There's an interface for navigating your collection with screenshots, genre, year, and description. So, again, that's stuff you can get with some flash cards have that.
You don't need, it doesn't look like you need to provide your own BIOS. Oh, I'm looking at, oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
So it's compatible with all original region-free patch.
Yeah, so any of
I'm
the
not
ones,
sure what that means.
I think it's just any, like, for instance, if I load up my flash card now, I can load up different BIOSes for Sega CD.
Okay, so if you want to get the different load up language for 1.1 or whatever. Okay, so this is going to use a micro SD card. It supports up to a 400 gig, which you're going to need potentially if you want all those Sega CD games on, because they're not small. You know, once you get into CD stuff, you're talking these games probably anywhere from 400 to 700, you know, megabytes. And then there's Sega CD games that have 2 or 3, starting with 4. So at that point,
no. Scotty Pippen, I think Slam City is 4 discs.
The 32X version of it?
Oh, just the regular one.
Okay. Yeah, now think about it. I think the Night Trap 32X one is that a couple? Anyway, so here's the point, is that 400 gig, yeah, you wouldn't need that for just the Genesis library. But now if you want everything, every Sega CD game, you're going to need that 400 gigs. It's going to add up pretty quickly there. So, yeah. And then, enhanced Mega Drive games with CD audio. That's really, really nice as well. Then I think I saw something about you also get the enhanced Master System sound. I think I saw that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's in there.
From the Japanese one, which you didn't get here. So, 232, is that euros or pounds there?
Euros.
I want a euro right now.
Yeah.
but so this will sell pretty well. I can picture this being a good combination to the analog Mega SG.
Yep.
You know, at that point you're spending $475. But at that point you should be pretty
much set.
Yeah,
but you wouldn't really need anything else either.
No, the only bad part is, you know, again, it's a lot more difficult to find the ISO. I mean, I haven't looked lately, but you know, you can download all the Genesis ROMs probably fairly easily, even if you want to just pick and choose certain ones. But I'm sure most people that get this will want probably everything loaded up on it. Or like 50 Sega CD games. And you got to go out and find a torrent or find a site that has the ISOs and download them. And that's going to take a bit more time than downloading. You know, you can download every Sega Genesis ROM in like probably, you know, 10 minutes on a decent, you know, connection.
Found them.
You found them?
Yeah.
You found all the ISOs?
Yeah, Sega CD ISOs.
Hey, don't say the website. Don't get us in trouble.
One second.
Okay. Well, there you go. So I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Allegedly, of course, you got to own all the original.
Well, yes.
Of course, yeah.
You can only play backups.
Wink! So, are you excited, Ian, for this?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to checking it out in August when my friends ships.
And again, it's $260 if that's euros.
He said it was 280 something shipped.
Oh, right, shipped. Here. So it cost $20 shipped. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. All right. And then, yeah, I think that was euros, not pounds. I always get this. The euro has an E in it.
It's the euro, yeah.
Okay. A pound is like a weird squiggly thing.
Squiggly L.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I wish I knew what I was talking about. It's the sterling, the pound sterling. Anything else to add? Did I just cover most of the stuff here?
Yeah, we did.
It's supposed to be your topic.
I talked about it, and then you ran with it.
I spiked the ball.
We got it.
But the interesting thing about this is if this could be applied in the future in order to emulate other CD-based systems, like they did with the Super, like, well, they're
did.
Doing it,
yeah.
The Super CD System 3, which I don't know if you know anyone ever got that. It's out of stock right now, actually, the Super CD System 3. That came out, I think we talked about it last year there.
I know someone online who got it, and they said it was very, very good.
And they also have MVS flash cartridge, which was the first one. So they're doing good stuff. The Terra Onion. Interesting name.
Sounds like a hearty meal, something. Earthy onion.
Wait, something you find at the Outback?
Yeah.
Get our blooming onions! The Terra Onion at the Outback! They always get guys that do an Australian accent, but they don't get real Australians to do those commercials for like Outback Steakhouse. Sorry, that's a pet peeve of mine. Anyway, okay. So we'll look forward to Ian's review of this. Maybe in Wednesday or September, that'll be Ian's debut video, like full 20-minute video reviewing it.
Yeah,
can't wait to see that.
Unlikely.
Okay, Ian,
sir.
We're fans of Dr. Mario.
I do like Dr. Mario.
I like Dr. Mario. I think it's more of a charming game than Tetris. And I'm a lot better at Dr. Mario than Tetris. So for that reason, I gravitate more towards a Dr. Mario. So we knew about Dr. Mario World being in the wings to come out as a mobile, one of those dirty mobile games. But now Nintendo's coming out with more information. They came out with a Welcome to Dr. Mario World YouTube trailer, so which explains how the game functions. So first of all, it's going to come out July 10th for iPhone and Android devices. It's a match 3 puzzler, which
yes.
I guess what Dr. Mario kind of was.
Yes, it was. I mean,
the original, was it the original match 3?
Yeah.
Or was that columns? Was columns a 3 or 4? I forget with columns.
Columns was get colors in a line 3.
Was Puzzle Bobble 3?
Puzzle Bobble is Connect 3.
So okay.
Is not a match 3 like Bejeweled, which is what I think people immediately think. So what this does is the new Dr. Mario World, instead of pills falling into a pit, basically it goes upwards like a Puzzle Bobble or something like that.
Which makes sense because your finger's usually on the bottom of
sure.
your phone.
So
it's reversing it.
Instead of the pills automatically falling, or at least falling very fast, it shows you basically grab the pill that's in at the bottom of the screen. So let's say it's a blue pill, and you drag it onto the screen, and it will start floating up to mm-hmm. the enemies. And as it's moving, it looks like you can actually spin it while it's moving.
And you still move it and yeah, drag it.
And still move it and drag it around. So some of these levels are showing, you know, a lot of, like, blocks and tricky places and the viruses beyond them. It looks like it's going to not only be, like, a puzzle game, but also there's a little bit of dexterity to that there, too, to get probably yeah. get it done in the...
Your fingertips going to get a workout.
In the minimum amount of moves.
Yeah, and so the goal is still to clear all the viruses, but now you have a certain number of capsules that you can do it in.
Yeah,
so
there's a move limit.
Which I guess you have to, because now, being that you can move these suckers any way you want, you got to provide some challenge or there'd be no challenge, really, to do this. And what's interesting about this is that that after, if part of a capsule gets used, if the one's still remaining, you can then drag that piece elsewhere too.
Yeah, it's looking like you can basically move everything.
So you can use, so if you just match, say, three yellows and they disappear and the blue's the other side, you can drag that blue to some blue guy, blue virus, and get rid of that. It looks like there's bombs that you could clear. There's turtle shells. So there's, you know, it changes up the formula a little bit more because we're in a mobile world. You have to do that. We can't be just bored with regular stuff. And you can get different doctors with unique skills.
Yeah, you can get Dr. Luigi, Dr. Peach, and Dr. Yoshi, I think.
And Dr. Toadstool.
Oh, all right.
Little Dr. Toadstool. And they have different powers, looks like that. Yeah. So, and there's different worlds that you can go in. So you build up your cute little staff. Looks like Yoshi can eliminate three objects at random, for example. That's what they show here. And then Peach can clear one comm at random. So it gives you a little incentive to use these other guys out. I mean, this is for the casual person on the go or on the toilet that, you know, you don't want to get stuck. So that's exactly what this is all about.
So it's free to play. And
be careful what you wish for.
It's free to play. And so basically it says that there's going to be 169 levels to start, but you can only attempt them so many times.
You basically have like a heart meter.
Before you pay with hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hearts are basically your energy. And if you run out of hearts, then you have to wait for them to slowly refill. So it's that tried and true method of you can play for free, but you can't play whenever you want, essentially.
You can't play for an hour and a half straight.
Yeah, you can't play for as long as you want. They will sell diamonds in this game for real money, and the diamonds can be used as hearts as well as what else can they
You can
be
buy
used
but diamonds is the currency, so you
so
can
So diamonds is the currency
you can
for
buy,
everything.
You can buy the other doctors with that. You buy the hearts. So like for example, 5 hearts is 10 diamonds, 60 minutes of infinite play it was 30 diamonds. So in this currency, 30 diamonds is about $3, just to give you an idea. They're about 10 cents each from when you look at the cost. So everyone out there that might have been $10 for a mobile game, I now wish this was $10 because I have a feeling people are going to spend a lot more than $10 playing this game over its life, potentially.
Possibly. I mean,
if it's basically $3 an hour for infinite play, for that's, yeah. And then you can also, I think it's for more tries at a single stage, use diamonds for as well. So this is why I don't mind paying money for a game and then not worrying ever again about it. Because if people get into it, so yeah, they're going to spend more money than they think. But that's how this model works. And Nintendo's going to make $1 billion. This is going to make a hell of a lot more than Super Mario Run because of that, I think.
I think so, too. I enjoyed Super Mario Run. I would always prefer to pay for a game than have it free to play. There are very few instances I can think of. And honestly, Pokemon Go does a pretty decent job of it. But yeah, I think it looks good regardless. I'll try it. We'll see if the free to play thing ends up scaring me away.
Like a virus. It attaches to you because Nintendo figured out anyone can download this, kids or anyone, and plus the more people download it, it gets recommended in the App Store, so you can try it, then whatever, just spend a couple bucks here and there, it's no big deal, we got the cure for you. So yeah, that's kind of disheartening. I'd rather just get the option to pay 10, even 15 bucks, and then not to worry about it again. It looks fun though. Are you into games like this usually?
Yeah, I said I'm gonna try it.
They're sort of like goofy. They're challenging, but not. I guess I would say you're just moving around and just matching colors. It's like a Basal Instinct that just put colors together and they explode and disappear and you feel good about yourself.
I love doing that. I love making colors explode.
That's why I love Bust a Move / Puzzle Bobble. Love that sort of thing. Is there a Puzzle Bobble on the App Store? There's got to be. There's a cat version at least. There's like a cat Bust a Move game that I know.
I'm almost positive there's an official version here.
But there's so many knockoffs because you can't like copyright just like a Puzzle Bobble type game at this point. But all right. So Dr. Mario World again comes out on July 10th, about a month before Ian's birthday.
Yeah,
just about. Your August
9th? August 9th.
I remember that. See?
Woo!
Or 9th. We're 3 months apart. 3 months of what? 3 years apart? Something like that.
I'll be 37.
Two years. 2 years, 3 months apart. All right. And there's Dr. Bowser in as well. I forgot about that.
It's like a boss fight.
But no, I think you can use him or get him.
It even says in the article it's a boss fight.
Oh. But he's a doctor. Why would you fight another doctor?
I don't know, because he's a bad doctor.
I would trust Dr. Bowser.
No, I feel like he probably abuses a sports license.
A sports license?
Yeah.
He's shooting people up with performance-enhancing drugs, yeah. PEDs?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So another, this is like the third NWC cart that's come about the past like 2.5 months. Is there a conspiracy?
This is wild. And I
would... Pat's worried about the value of his game dropping.
I figured, I when I was first alerted to this, I thought it was... a sign of like, you know, people getting frisky and letting them go, but it's not. This is a new one.
It's a new one. This is posted on our favorite website that was recently sold, Nintendo Age. Posted by Armageddon Potato, which is a great name, by the way. hey guys, I just got the phone with a friend of mine who buys and resells storage units. He just sent me pics claiming he had uncovered this, and it's pictures of a scraped off gray NWC cart. The label's gone, and there's some writing on there, which is hard to read. And it's an NWC.
I think it says Rooster Pepper.
Rooster Pepper?
I'm just making something up.
On the back, it says Chris. Yes. Looks like it says Chris. So, and then there's pictures of the board there. It's an NWC cart. And pictures of it being turned on. So someone struck some gold in a storage unit. You don't know what they paid for a storage unit. You don't know if it was $100, $150, $1,000. That the Storage Wars show has sort of exposed the business, and more people got into it. From what I hear, storage units used to be $30, $50. I see a spider crawling on my Master System games. But now storage units that typically would be dirt cheap now can cost hundreds of dollars, and it's more of a gamble. But if you find an NWC cart you weren't expecting, you're all good.
Yeah.
That's fine. Don't worry about the lawn chair crap that you'll have problem selling, or the busted up lawnmower that someone put into the storage unit, right? Who cares?
Yeah, you could sell this.
So I guess the first question I'm going to ask is, you know, obviously, what's the value of this is now the third label-less NWC card. The famous one with Mario written. There's another one that has no label, and now you have the scraped label one, we'll just call it. The scraped label. So, Ian, what do you think? Being that we know that the one went under the radar for $13.5 grand, we know one sold for I think around 20 or a little over. I think went a little over 20. I think it was like 23 or 24 on a private sale. In this weird sort of age now, with WADA and other outsiders getting into the industry, comics people, what do you think one of these could go for on the open market? One of the label-less NWCs.
I don't know. I would say that it could get at least as much as the one that sold for 13.5 or 13. I'd say it's probably 15K.
15? Wow.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Do you think this one, someone's postulated between 8 and 12? I think it's going to be the question of, is there more notoriety to like the ones like the Mario one that everyone knows about? Or do you want one that's actually in good condition and not bad condition? And it goes back to, this is the 30th time I'm saying it, that there's no grading system when it comes to carts. When it comes to these video game carts, there's no like, this is poor condition. This is a 0.5 label out of 10, right?
Most NWCs you see will be at least a 3 or 4 or 5, and some get up to like 7 or 8, and there's a couple that are really clean if you want to say they're like a 9, you know. So this is a 0.5. This is a comic book with the cover ripped directly off.
Well, it's tough for me to have a guess as to what it would go for, since that last one didn't really sell for what it probably would have. So it'll probably be less than what obviously a good one will go for.
Say 10 grand at least, easily? I'd say easy 10 at this point.
Sure. It's a very punk rock NWC.
Punk rock. So on Nintendo Age, I didn't know this. There's a graph that tracking all the numbers of the NWCs from 1 to 350. Color-coded with in green which ones are confirmed. I didn't know they had this before. Which ones are confirmed with a blurry photo, which ones are confirmed with no photo, which ones are rumored. So according to this now, this makes this the 78th confirmed copy of a gray NWC out of the 350. So that's a survival rate of Patmath 8 over 35. What is that, 20%? No, 7. No, what? It's like 20%? No, 20, 7, 5. It's 20%. It's sure. a little, around 20 to 23%, something like that. So what's interesting, though, is that this doesn't take into account that most likely 26 of the grays were cannibalized for the gold. Most likely. That probably makes sense to do that, not create new boards for it. So really, then, when you look at it like that, let's say there's 350, and they say that because I guess the highest number that's confirmed is 348. That's been found, so it's probably 350. So you have then seven. Now I'll just do real math. So let's just say they made 350 total, and that includes both gold and the gray there because they cannibalized it. So we'll do the Pat math here. So 78 gray plus 26 gold. Excuse me. How many remain of the 26? I think it's 13 or 14. We'll just say 14. I think it's 14. 14 plus 78. 92 confirmed NWCs that still exist divided by 350. That's 26% that we know still exist. That's a decent number for something like that.
Yeah, it is.
It's a decent number. Obviously, there'll be more that come out. I don't think you're going to get to 50% ever at this point, since ones will probably destroy it and thrown out during the competition. Maybe you get up to 30, 32%. Maybe you get to 100, get to 30%, something like that at this point. But the fact that we've found a few, though, within 6 months is kind of weird like that.
By the way, what I thought was Rooster Pepper is absolutely Rad Racer.
Rad Racer?
Yeah. It says, looking at it now, you can see it says Mario, Rad Racer, and Tetris written on it.
So someone scraped off the label, which takes a lot of work for an NES card.
Well, and they didn't succeed very well either.
I'm just saying, just to write the three games that are on the cartridge. They really didn't like that there wasn't a description, I guess, on the NWC label.
I guess so.
And with that, they cost this eventual reseller, storage unit seller, probably like 5 to 10 grand at least by doing that. But it still found money, right? It still found money. I'm not into storage units. I know people at Swap Meet that have done it before. This could happen again. It could not happen. You know, it depends. People are trying to postulate. Is this one of the Chris winners, one of the 90 Chris's? I think there was like 3 or 4 Chris's out of the 90 that were the finalists. So was this one of those Chris's? At this point, it'd be hard to know at this point. But I imagine this will go up for, seeing being that storage people flip the stuff, this is going to go up for auction probably next month or so. Or a private sale. Because sometimes private sales go for more because people want to make sure they get it. You know.
It's the truth.
Mine was a private. Both of mine were a private sale, actually.
Private dancer, dancing for money, do what you want me to do.
Anything else to add, Ian, after that?
Nah, just a little Tina.
All right.
Just a little Tina.
Flex Pro Meals, Ian. We're proud to partner with them and to eat their yummy meals. Flex Pro Meals is a meal delivery company that sends healthy pre-made meals to your doorstep. Their goal isn't to give you salad, but epic recipes, entrees you may have grown up on that they make healthier, yummier versions of. Ian, what have you been eating lately from Flex Pro Meals?
Baked fish and chips. That's been a good one. Chicken and dumplings. Been enjoying that as well. Backyard barbecue is always a delicious one.
I took the one off my rotation. You enjoying that one right now?
Vani enjoys that one. I worked in the
breakfast burritos is tasty for a breakfast burrito. And then now I'm salivating. Smoked brisket mac always gets the job done for me.
Yep.
And then the staple has become for me just grilled chicken with sweet potatoes with some veggies.
Chicken and pots.
Some roughage there. Mm. And it's good. It's good eating. There's also other ones like beef stroganoff. Like you said, there's the Asian dishes as well thrown in there. And there's, like I said, there's a good rotation. Every month or two, they'll swap out a few lesser performing ones, maybe, or ones that, you know, seasonal. So right now, you can get 20% off your first order. Use code CUPODCAST when you visit flexpromules.com. It's convenient. It's good for when you get back from the gym. Take it to work. You know, just don't over-microwave it in your workspace. Microwave, you know, that'd be bad for people, potentially. Be respectful. Again, 20% off your first order. Use code CUPODCAST when you visit flexpromules.com. Ian.
Patrick.
We're fans of The Register.
We are. At least their coverage of the VCS has been fantastic.
We're big fans of Kieran McCarthy out of San Francisco. I owe Kieran McCarthy, let's see, San Francisco, a clam chowder bowl. I think I owe him with some sourdough bread. Sourdough bowl. This is the second time Mr. McCarthy has written about.
Third
time?
Because there was the first time. Then there was the second time where he had to bring back the interview because they were saying he was just trolling.
It's the third time he's talking about the great VCS console.
So we feel a little kinship with Mr. Kieran McCarthy.
So it was at GDC last year with the hotel suite thing.
Yes.
Where he saw the model and then he didn't get straight answers out of the people presenting him, you know, like, what is this? And they couldn't give him any answers.
Yeah.
Basically. So, but he's back again, Mr. McCarthy.
So he wrote a good article here, and it brings up some very good points, some stuff that we have not brought up ourselves.
And it's a cheeky article again.
It is.
Very cheeky.
But so he brings up something that I didn't notice, and that is that the release date was missed twice. Having twice missed launch dates of December 2017 and July 2019... i.e. next month. This time around, the official launch date is March 2020, although Atari is still not committing to that date, noting on its website, all dates are good faith estimates and subject to change due to unforeseen circumstances.
So this is interesting because
these are not good faith estimates.
When the French Atari CEO, which I believe was, I think Infogrames bought Atari, so that's why they're French, because Infogrames is French. When he was on with British Jim, with Stuart, good old Stuart, your buddy, he said on that, late this year, early next year.
Right.
2020 isn't late this year, and March isn't exactly that early. I guess it's early-ish.
It would be end of first quarter.
End of first quarter. But the point that Kier is making here in this very cheeky article, I love that word now, is that now you're dropping this date 2.5 years later. And now, though, you've taken literally a few million dollars from people along the way.
Yeah.
And probably going to take more when you do more pre-orders. So we might as well read some of this article. Aside from the fact that Atari hasn't produced any hardware for some 20 years and only has access to its own back catalog of retro games, the VCS will offer the same specs as current game consoles at a time when the next generation of those consoles, with much higher specs, are due on the market. It's not wrong.
Nope.
2020.
This man is telling no lies.
The baseline VCS is supposed to come with 4 gig of RAM, 32 gig of storage, an AMD Ryzen processor, an unspecified AMD Radeon graphics chipset, and will cost $250. It'll provide 60 frames per second and 4K resolution. If you want an 8 gig RAM box, the cost jumps to $280. And if you want Atari's controllers with it, an extra $110, $390. Is that true?
Yes.
It's $390 just to get the...
everything.
To get their rebranded gamepad and to get the joystick.
And the system.
Holy shit.
Yeah, you can walk into, what is probably it? Anywhere, but you can walk, Luna, for instance, it's like, the price has just dropped again. I want to say PS4s are $199 now, $189.99.
What's the cheapest I can get a new PS4 for and a new Xbox One?
Cheapest? No idea, but I'm going to guess probably $250.
Maybe $200 on sale?
Perhaps. By this Christmas, I'm sure there will be bundles for new ones for $200.
And this is going to cost minimum $250 and really over $300 if you want their crappy controller with the red thumb button. Things. So he says this is worse. worst current specs. This is worse than the current specs of the Xbox One and the PS4 for the same price. But come 2020, the new PS5 and newly announced Xbox Project Scarlet will be on the market, offering 8K, 120 frames per second, more storage, and more RAM at the very least. As such, it makes absolutely no sense to buy an Atari VCS. And he links to his original article from July of 2017.
Yep.
In fact, Atari's entire concept of its new console seems confused, to say the least, which is what we said after watching Stuart. The machine will run its own custom operating system, Atari OS, based on Linux.
So the last part that I would bring up is this is a good part. So the biz is even confused about its only market advantage, the Atari brand and styling, from its announcement this week. The legendary brand is keenly focused at E3 on the things that set Atari VCS apart. This is what Atari said. And the platform's performance capabilities while distancing the hardware from any lingering retro box impressions. Like the modern hardware that it lives on, the Atari VCS digital interface stands out with a striking and modern design, successfully taking inspiration from a vast and beloved heritage. And then he immediately goes to point out that they have not shown off the operating system or any of that. So, you know, we're just taking that on their word that it's going to be striking.
And this is things we've said. Whichever way you cut it, the Atari VCS makes absolutely no sense. The company is completely untested when it comes to hardware. And in fact, Atari isn't a real company anymore.
Yep.
It's more of a marketing shell that owns Atari's intellectual property with a skeleton staff and no games expertise. It's a virtual guarantee that the new VCS console will be buggy. I'll argue this. What are the odds this comes out at this point?
I have no idea, honestly.
Is it even money? One-to-one?
And by the way, go to the register.co.uk and read...
Link the article.
Yeah, read Kieran's article. It's very good. He goes into a bit more stuff.
And that's right.
They
accused them of professional trolling. That's right.
That's what I was talking about.
So that was article two.
That was article two because he had three. To pull up the he pulled up the interview.
He had the audio.
So he went through and completely reseated.
There's no screenshots of the operating system.
But I don't know if this is. I mean, this is actually going to make it. Yes, I think it will. I think they have the money behind them to put out something shitty. I think that they're going to do bare minimum and release some.
Well, it can't be. Well, yeah, but being that they somehow got the deal. We didn't talk about this when they announced it's going to be in GameStop and Walmart stores. If there's still GameStop stores a year from now,
true,
it'll be in GameStop stores, and it's going to be in Walmart's. They must have whoever they had to speak to the Walmart and GameStop buyers, the people that are responsible for getting the product on shelves. They must have really schmoozed them for Walmart to give up.
Give that person a better job somewhere else because they can apparently talk their ass
off. Wow. Because for Walmart to say, we're going to give up space in our video game section that Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo have for real products people want.
Real products.
for a $300 retro console that anyone walking by will look at this and be, what the fuck is this? This is going to be a repeat of basically looking at the Atari Jaguar sitting next to the PlayStation and the N64. Right? Like, that's basically what...
I think you're giving this too much credit.
No, but I'm saying this is going to be.
Yes, I know. I'm just saying, I think that...
But the Jaguar had real games that were developed.
Yeah.
It may not be a system that stood out by itself. This is just...
I'm waiting for the spicy exclusive where they announce a special edition of Roller Coaster Tycoon for, like, the fucking fifth time.
If they can get that Unreal Tournament 2004 Ultra Edition on there, I might be in.
You'll be the biggest VCS fan out there. What are you doing, Pat? Oh, I'm just playing Unreal Tournament on my Atari. Okay, Pat. I'll talk to you later.
Well, Atari just published that. I think Epic still has the rights to that.
Well, yes, I'm just saying.
But they did publish that. So that was the last time Atari was worth anything to me. It was 15 years ago.
Oh, that's right. They did publish that.
They did, but that was still like, I guess, Atari. That was Atari 2.0. This is like 3.5 or 4.
That was Infogrames Atari.
Was that? That was Infogrames?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That was 2004? Okay. Well, they did that.
That might have been Hasbro. I don't know. Whatever.
Hasbro.
They went through Hasbro first. I think
Well, I think we're in Atari 3.5.0, 3.8 at this point. So anyway, so the closing statement is pretty good here. The closing couple paragraphs. Had Atari simply recreated the beloved Atari 2600 and charged $100 for it, it could have created its own retro market and made a tidy profit. If it had been smart, it could have also opened up its games and encouraged a new generation of gamers and coders to develop new games for the console. Just look at the success of Roblox. I don't know what that is.
What's Roblox, Ian?
It's some online thing that kids do.
Okay. Instead of what it's done is spunk 3 million of its fans' money, you can tell they're from the UK, on developing an underpowered, outdated, overpriced, overcomplicated console that will please no one and go nowhere. Here's the thing, Ian. If this doesn't come out, would there even be recourse for people to get their money back at that point?
Well, it was through Indiegogo, so... I mean, I don't think so, because they didn't need to provide a prototype. And, it sucks when this happens, but people constantly forget, when you back something, you aren't purchasing something.
No.
You are backing something, and that is your reward for backing it. If it fails, it fails.
You're not backing a guarantee. You're backing a promise.
Yeah.
That could be broken. A promise that something, in good faith, hopefully will come out. I'm not saying this is the laser eraser scam thing from a couple years ago.
Oh.
they want to come out with this. If they don't come out with this, Atari's name will ever be dirt. They might as well sell it to the fifth owner at that point. I'll buy the Atari. I'll come out with the Atari hat and speakers. I don't know that ever came out. The watch never came out, though. Remember the watch we talked about?
Oh, I don't think that ever
came out. So
the hat with the speakers did.
That did.
I saw people wear.
Oh, that's right. They were clearancing.
Yeah,
they were clearing out.
On sale. Yeah,
I should have bought one. There must be other hats with speakers. They probably just rebranded
it's
them.
Your pooping hat.
Who would wear a hat? Is that the new like hat with beer cans on the side with straws?
The hat with beer cans was more practical.
Yes, that's still around.
Yeah,
that was a Seaside Heights a big thing in 1985, 86. That was a huge deal back then because people were drinking on the boardwalk getting drunk. Anyway, so you know who's drunk with good ideas? Atari coming out with the VCS, right?
Deals from the game store.
All right, Ian, do we have a tale?
Hail
from the game store?
From the game store?
I think we do.
I broke the TV. So I guess that could kind of be a tale from the game store. It had been a day. It had been a week. I had a lot of like shitty kids in. Someone was trying to sell me two games. I can't remember what games they were. It was like a sports game and like a Battlefield 3 or something.
For like a PS3?
For like a 360, PS4. Yeah. It was like an old... And I was like... and I looked and like GameStop is offering like 10 cents or, you know, nothing for them. And I was like, $2. And the guy like freaked out on me. He was like, $2? That's a fucking ripoff. And I was like, whoa, buddy. I was like, I know it's not a lot of money, but GameStop won't even take these. And he's like, you sell those games for $5 here. Why can't I get, you know, $4? I'm like, that's not how it works. So his brother called me a fucking asshole, and then I yelled at them.
Whoa, how old were these kids?
They were like mid-teens, like 15, okay. 16. And I just got pissed. So I walked, and I was yelling at them. And I walked to the front door, and I yelled at them as they walked down the street. Nothing impressive
wow.
or anything, but I was just very angry. I was like, no, I'm going to fucking make sure they know that they're shitty people. So I yelled at them as they walked down the
yeah,
street.
Yeah, my sure.
Yeah, go away.
Go away, youngsters.
Go away. But
I will say this. If you think Ian's making up these stories, you forgot to say this.
Oh, yeah, we forgot to mention this.
Pat was present for a potential tale from the game store. I went to the Chula Vista location.
Yep.
Two locations, El Cajon, Chula Vista, and to pick up the remaining stock of a certain NES guidebook because it's out of stock. You can pre-order third print run at ultimatenes.com. And I was in the back picking up the boxes.
So Pat's in the back picking up boxes.
And I hear a little bit of Ray's voices.
So basically, while Pat's in the back getting the boxes, this dude comes in and...
Early 20s about, you want
to
say?
Yeah, like early 20s, I would say.
23-ish.
And he comes in and he's holding a bag. And he looks at me and I look at him and I'm like, hey, what's going on? Good morning. And he's friendly. He's like, hey, what's going on? And he goes, I've got this bag. Do you want me to put it on the counter? And I said, no, that's okay. I said, I mean, there's no games in the cases or anything. He's like, oh, okay, cool. So he's looking around. And he picks up a couple of games and puts them down after like 2-3 minutes. It was very short, 2 minutes. and he puts the bag on top of it. He puts the games on the counter, and he puts the bag up there, and he goes, I want to trade these in towards these games. And okay. I'm like, sure. So I look through, and I set aside, like, four games of his that I can't take because they're too scratched.
What type of games are they?
They're PS2 games.
Okay.
It was, like, two PS2 games and, like, two Wii games. And then I had a stack of probably about six games of his that I could take. So I was like, all right, so these are too scratched. I can't take these ones, but these I can take. Let me look them up. And I go to sit down. I sit down, and as I'm looking, I can see the guy just, like, fill with rage. He's just getting so fucking angry. And he looks at me, and he's like, nah, screw this, they're too scratched bullshit. It's everything or nothing.
Wow.
And I was like, what? Like, it was just a turn. I still to this day, I have no idea where that came from. And I was like, all right, dude, I don't need your games then. Take them. And he's like, it's fucking ridiculous. And he turns around. I said, then don't scratch your fucking games. And that's when Pat was like,
I walked my box. I'm like, yeah, I looked behind the curtain. I'm like,
Pat walks out with his box. He goes, what was that? And I was like, I've just been open for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was literally beginning of the day. That was,
yeah, within the first 5 minutes that happened.
So I still don't know why Ian works in retail for after all these years. It doesn't help his anxiety probably. But I know this exists because I've worked in retail. I know these type of people.
Yeah.
But when you combine people that want money, they're not buying stuff. People that want money from your business and then get pissed when they're declined, it's going to create some weird moments.
Yeah, it's obviously going to create weird moments. And just the fact that it's any sort of hobbyist shop, anything that someone can get into, anything that someone can get into heavily, you know, that's going to attract certain people. I get really into certain things. I get really excited when I'm at record stores. But there's lots of reasons why this stuff is all very actually normal in retail, especially like a video game shop. I guarantee you a board game shop is the same way. I guarantee you that a pipe tobacco shop is the same way. Anything that just has people who are into like one specific thing.
Do you think people resell their tobacco pipes?
No, but I mean,
trade them in?
I go to Racine and Laramie to get pipe tobacco every once in a while. So,
you smoke a pipe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To get pipe tobacco every once in a while. And there's interesting people there too.
Okay. But they debate stuff and.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
How to pack your tobacco properly.
You do have to be... There's an art to packing.
Is there different types of pipes where, like, some... The blowhole's different? I don't know.
I have a nice pipe that I like, and I know what tobacco
is. Was there a pipe war in the 90s, like the console wars, where there was, like, two sides that...
I also have all of my grandfather's antique pipes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting.
I don't know how my grandfather's... Anyway.
So, I was going to say real quick, though... I got real kerfluffled and flustered this week. And so it was towards the end of the day on Friday, and I was getting real happy. Saturday, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go home. But I'm already at that point where I'm losing stuff. Like, I'm trying to get ready to go, but I'm like, okay, no keys. Where are the keys? Phone, where's the phone? Okay. Guy comes in with an N64. And I'm about to tell them, hey, man, we don't buy anything from, you know, after 7 o'clock, because this was probably 7:30, 7:35. But he was a customer that I recognized, and so I kind of stopped. And he goes, hey, can you test out this N64? He's like, it's not working for me. He's like, and I know, you know, what I should usually do. And I'm like, yeah, I can test out the N64 for you, not a big deal. So I grab the game, and I grab the system, and I hook it up, and... It's dirty.
It's just dirty.
Yeah, the game is real, real bad.
Would you stop there and say your game's dirty? That's why it's not working?
Well, yes, but I've got 20 minutes, so I'm going to be helpful. Like I said, the customer is a regular, and I don't know why they would be having this issue with it, but I'm cleaning it. It's gross. Anyways, I clean it twice, stick it in. It works. It's fine. System works. So I immediately in my head go back to finish in my head thinking about finishing up all my closing duties. I unhook the power cord, but I do not unhook the TV cord, the AV cable.
From the front?
From the back of the N64.
Of the back, but was it going in the front of the TV or the back?
The back of the TV.
Okay.
And I walked away, all whatever, discombobulated, and was like, all right, you're all set, no problem, take it easy. and he picks up the N64 and goes, thanks, and turns around to walk away with it, and the TV just comes fucking crashing to the ground. They always talk about things happening in slow-mo.
How big is this TV?
Oh, not, I mean...
19-inch?
It's smaller than this.
Like a 13-inch.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, because it doesn't weigh that much, you could do this.
Okay. Yeah. But, yeah, that was terrifying. And the poor customer was so... They went just, like sheet white. And I was like, it's fine. It's not your fault. And they're like, oh, my God, I did that. I'm like, I'm the one who told you you could pick up the system and go. I was like...
If there's fault involved, it's 75% Ian, at least, here.
Yeah.
25% his. He had to have realized at some point that the cord is still attached to something.
He did. That's what I mean. Like, it was all in, like... It wasn't even slow-mo. It was freeze frame.
Like a second.
He just grabbed it.
He just janked...
No, he turned and goes, oh, no. And, like, I could see it, like...
But I mean, as soon as he picked it up, he has to see that the cord is running to the TV.
Oh, there's a lot of cords, though, on that counter, usually. I mean,
So he assumed maybe it was just a loose cord on the N64
I told him he could take it and go. He took it.
Yeah, it's definitely, you're definitely, yeah. I said, this is like a civil suit. You're at least 75% liable. He's not 100, he's like maybe 15% liable here.
So it was
a nice little 13-inch, though.
Yeah.
CRT.
So I destroyed it, and I had to call Treg, right before closing. And
well, you can pick another one up somewhere, or you had probably another one in the back.
He got another and dropped it off.
At this point, you had a stockpile of CRTs. They're like gold.
Oh, no, it's not a CRT.
Oh.
A flat screen.
Oh, a flat screen. How did it break? A flat screen. Was it smashed
it
the front?
It fell like fucking 3 feet off the counter.
Oh, it's a flat screen. Who cares, then? I thought it was a little CRT that could have potentially killed like a small child.
No, we can't test the CRTs anymore because then we couldn't test any of the modern consoles.
All right. It was one of those little... Okay, those are cheap.
They're yeah,
like
it looks
50
like
bucks.
It was 80, but yeah.
You have 80...
Still, you don't want to go throwing TVs on the ground if you can avoid it.
No, like I said, you're at fault. I would dock your pay. That's what I would definitely do. If you destroy the obscenely expensive... CU Pocketstron 9000, there's going to be hell to pay.
Well, luckily, Treg does not dock my pay.
I was going to say, this is what I would recommend, Ian. Mm. Why is there not a poster when you walk in? Sort of like a dentist sort of poster with like Mr. Q-Tip saying, have you tried cleaning your games with like a smile? Because wouldn't that solve?
No.
90% of the queries you get asked?
No, because so many people come in, they're like, I tried to clean the, like they'll buy something and they'll be like, I clean the games like you said, and then I'll take the game and I'll clean it and it's dirty as shit.
People still have the poster, so when people walk in, it's on their mind, and maybe they won't ask you, how do I clean my games? Or just have Mr. Q-Tip. Someone draw Mr. Q-Tip for Ian with a smiley face saying, you know, it's Mr. Q-Tip holding Q-Tips and a Menda bottle on the side saying, have you cleaned your games today? Almost like, have you brushed your teeth today? But it's Mr. Q-Tip.
It's like Clerks.
I will commission
that. How much
that.
Is this? It doesn't matter how many things you
put up. Mr. Q-Tip should be a thing, I think, at all retro game shops. This will be my mascot, Mr. Q-Tip. Mm-hmm. We'll have plushies. We'll have T-shirts. Mr. Q-Tip holding Q-Tips with a smile and a Menda bottle. That's what it should be.
All right.
So that was our Tales from the Game Store. See, we got like 10 minutes out of that. 11 minutes. You say, oh, we're not going to do one. Like, there's got to be one done every at least 3 weeks or else there's going to be a riot, I think, with the people out there. There's got to be some good come out of you working at Luna Video Games, you know, besides your anxiety from working at Luna Video Games. We have to have something positive happen from it. Well, you make people happy playing old video games, I think. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Patreon poll topic, Ian.
Patreon.com/CU podcast.
You know I bully you into saying this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can
all
get
the time.
Ian gets his writings, half his writings are about some sort of food that he's either consumed or created or talks about. But he talked about Yahtzee app about a month ago.
Yep.
On there. He talks about, and then we have our Patreon poll topic. And Ian's hangout. How did your hangout go on Sunday?
Went well.
Went well?
Yes.
You can see how Ian looks before noon, besides right now.
I was going to say, you always see how I look before noon.
In third place, Ian's, this is not going well for your topic, 14%. Remove the film off game consoles or let it be? Only 14%. That's gone. We tried it. Wow. Neck and neck at 42 and 44%. At 42%, why is the term doesn't age well problematic with video games? I really wanted that one to win. I can go off on that.
What and then at first place, 44%, what unlicensed NES games would have been good if Nintendo had made them?
Dudes with Attitude / Trolls with Treasure Island. I swear there's a good game in there somewhere.
It's a puzzle game.
Yep, it needs to not look like shit. It needs some charm around it.
I think Dudes with Attitudes, what did I give that review? Did I review that one? I'm going to go to a certain app. So it's a puzzle game where the pieces move back and forth from the outer edge to the middle, and then you change the color of the guy to remove those colored blocks by hitting these little color symbols. So like you hit them, you turn them green, then you bounce to the green guys and eliminate them. Then you hit the red one, you bounce to the red bricks and eliminate them. It's puzzle / really action.
There's a lot of timing to it more than anything is flipping your colors when you're supposed to.
I got to read down. I have the beta version on my phone for the upcoming re-release.
But I like that. I gotta download it. And then as far as that, another one, I would go with Mermaids of Atlantis. Mermaids of Atlantis actually has a fairly decent idea behind
bubbles.
It. It's another puzzle game. It's a puzzle game. I don't know. But the bubbles rise and you rotate them and you have to connect the bubbles. It's a perfectly serviceable puzzle game. I actually like it. Once again, though, it's just really rough around the edges because of the third-party nature of it.
And actually...
Unlicensed.
That was actually rebranded from Bald Bath Babes that came out first.
Yep.
You rebrand an adult game. That's interesting. I don't have the app open on me. I got to re-download the app. Ian, how would Nintendo would have done Wally Bear and the No Gang? You think they would have pulled it off with like using like Toadstool or using Yoshi?
For which one?
Wally Bear and the No Gang.
Oh.
How would Nintendo have had their anti-drug game come to fruition in your mind there?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Would you work in some Dr. Mario puzzle? Like eliminate the drugs or pop your own pills?
Well, I mean, Toby. So you could have a Koopa in there to replace Toby Turtle.
Okay.
And,
this is a turtle.
Yep. And you could have
so what is there? The fox? There's the fox.
You could have Nabbit
there's the
bear. In there to be the rabbit.
Okay.
And Nabbit could be charged with stealing pharmaceuticals from Dr. Mario.
Okay.
And I'm gonna say Toad has to go and get him back.
I'm re-downloading my app right now so I can look up all the unlicensed games. What about any of the Tengen games? RBI Baseball. If that was an NES release, they would have put on some NES characters on there.
Nintendo characters.
That would have been great.
There was a first party RBI release. There was a licensed RBI release.
Okay, but then it went third. Okay. Just, fine, don't go with my premise that could have talked about for 2 minutes, Ian. Just blow it up. Okay. I'm gonna look up here everything once my app gets going here. Unlicensed games, game search.
You gotta be able to think one from the top of your head.
Well, 90%, 80% is licensed on the NES. 85% is about license. So Tengen, Color Dreams games, Bunch games, Wisdom Tree games, ABE games, American Game Cartridge Inc. games. Those are the unlicensed companies. Am I missing one there? Let me just search unlicensed here, Ian. God, right. Jesus.
Just saying.
Get snappy with me here.
No, I'm surprised that the Nintendo guy can't think.
I'm tired,
one.
Ian. Uh-huh. I was up till 1:30 mm-hmm. last night. You're like, I'm gonna do the list view. Okay, all right. There's 95 unlicensed games. So it was actually we had a Tetris one, so that did pretty well. I'm trying to see one that would have been not like a Rolling Thunder because that's. Semi-licensed. That was a real.
Yeah, I don't feel like the Tengen carts really count.
They don't count. They don't count there. Would Nintendo have done their own Operation Secret Storm? They would have done their own Desert Storm release. I doubt that would have happened there. How
Raid
about
2020?
How about a Nintendo Micro Machines? That would have done Gangbusters. I mean, that one actually sold very well because it was on Shop at Home. I think it was on QVC Micro Machines. So that actually did well.
Yeah, I mean that was the one release that they did
Comerica.
They kept doing. I mean, the Micro Machines, they stopped trying to do Linus Spacehead after the Genesis, but Micro Machines is still being made today.
Oh, they're still doing that. Let's see. I'm trying to find one that would fit some sort of like mascot or something that Nintendo could do a twist on. Because a lot of it is like Double Strike. It's just like a generic shooter. That's not going to work.
How about Big Nose the Caveman?
Big Nose the Caveman?
Yeah.
That's like Joe and Mac-ish.
Already?
What about Super Robin Hood?
From the Quattro games? Oh, Jesus, yeah. God. How about Captain Comic?
Honestly, Captain Comic always, because the DOS version is kind of fun. I used to play the DOS version. That's actually a game that I think has a pretty good game hiding underneath it.
Hiding somewhere. Underneath it. So I got 2.5 stars.
I think that's probably a good call, actually, Captain Comic.
Okay. They wouldn't do Blackjack. They wouldn't do Bible Adventures. Baby Boomer. The NES version of Baby Boomer. That's what we want.
Gumshoe.
Well, come on, Ian. You have like you're shooting like things that are going to hit Baby Yoshi or Baby Toadstool in front of him. That could have been something.
That could have been something. Yeah.
Let's see. No Action 52. It's slim pickings when it comes to the unlicensed stuff that you think Nintendo could turn around. Pesterminator, the Western Exterminator. You know what's funny about this? Whenever I would visit my ex at her condo, there was always Pesterminator guy, like, because it's a real exterminator company. There was a van sitting outside, so I think someone worked for that company there, which escapes me at the top of my head which one it is, what company it is. But he has the same, you know, with the top hat, he's hiding the mallet behind his back to crush rodents, I guess, because that's cute. All right, we're running out of steam here.
I think he did fine with Captain Comic.
With Captain Comic?
Yeah.
That's the one.
I think that was a good one.
There's not going to be a Nintendo first party Sunday fun day, the ride. You're not going to get Tiles of Fate, most likely, because that's kind of like, what is that? Was that like a Mahjong?
Shanghai.
Oh, Shanghai. I don't know. There's been that Mahjong. Don't tell me. Don't care.
Shanghai don't is care. The solitaire.
Okay.
I mean, being happy with less info is not good.
What would be the Raid 2020 NES version? That's an anti-drug one, though, kind of. That wouldn't happen as well. All right. Well, thanks for the Patreon whole topic there. We got
whole
some
topic.
We got some miles there, and I have a feeling next time it might be the problematic doesn't age well one. All right, Q&A time.
Do one.
On the CU podcast. We'll do one.
We'll do one.
This is from, remember, we're not going to do a podcast for like about 9 days.
Well, let's do it.
This is from Chuck. It just says Chuck. I don't have the Twitter name. Why do YouTubers create personas and act as those characters instead of their true selves?
I mean, I don't know. My take on it is there's a couple reasons why. One, these people want to be liked, so they have to act a character out that doesn't have their faults. That's what you have to do on the, you know, on the big stage. So they want to be liked.
The big YouTube stage.
Yeah, the big YouTube
stage. Or Twitter stage. Or, excuse me, Twitch stage.
Yeah. So, streaming. I mean, obviously, when you're doing this sort of thing for... you know, whatever it is, money, a business, you need people to like you. You need to be attractive to them. You need to be, there needs to be good reasons for them to want to be your friend. So they're going to act as an oversized version of themselves online. The other one is, honestly, some YouTubers are private, and having that sort of, persona, is sort of a defense mechanism. But then there's other YouTubers who use their personas to take advantage of people. I mean, we certainly don't have any examples of that.
There's no one that's done like 5 videos on me in the past 6 months that we can bring up.
I was thinking of someone else, but yeah, that person too. But yeah, I mean, there's basically my saying is, well, my thing here is not having a persona is not always bad if you're using it to try to separate work from real life. But I think a lot of times it gets out of control.
Well, this is performance art.
Sure.
Podcasting in a way is performance art, radio. This we're putting on a performance in some aspects. It's not really necessarily a persona, but we're putting on a performance.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between performance and persona.
Sure. But when you have to embody a character to appeal to a certain audience, that's why you're doing it. Because it's always about market share and garnering an audience. And there was a CNET did an article about, you know, the rise of the angry YouTube gamers and things like that in the past year. We've seen it past year and a half about it. And even the people came out and said, some of the people said, like, no, I'm not like this in real life necessarily, but this is how I know people will watch my stuff.
Right.
I have to pretend. I have to stand out. I got to pretend to be angry about shit in order to capture that audience.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, there is that audience.
Yep.
There's one that exists. There's one that probably people get pulled into. But people know that these audiences exist because they see other people doing it. Before it was the angry, you know, originally it was just like the angry YouTuber viewers where people saw James doing it and you had the irate gamer copy him and you had other people. You had the, what the fuck was that other one? There was a, like, you know, a handful of angry gamers back in like 2006, 7, 8 that were people knew about. The Game Dude, that was the other one that was back then. So that was an act though. You can tell that was an act. That was a performance. Sure. But now you have people doing commentary and doing game reviews where they become a character. Whether it's you know, Jim Sterling doing like a wrestling character and he's sitting in front of a podium. Whether it's people pretend to be a pro gamer and that's their persona there. It's because they have to attract an audience, and it's not necessarily that they couldn't attract an audience being themselves, but it's more of a guarantee that if you put on an act, you're going to attract an audience. Dr. Disrespect looks like a goofball because it attracts an audience. There's, you know, he knows that, hey, there's tons of streamers out there. I'm going to put on sunglasses, a mustache, a fucking wig, and pretend I'm from the 1980s, and people are going to be, this is different, this is cool, and it worked for him. And then he goes into bathrooms at
E3. And then he went and films. Refilmed inside bathrooms.
But he'll be fine. The point is this. I'm not trying to knock the guy. He found a formula and it worked. But him being himself may not have worked. And that's with anything. It's performance art at that point. That's what it is. It's not to knock people that do it, but it's just the reality is that they have to do that. The only issue, though, is that if you attract an audience for a certain reason, maybe you're the angry gamer guy, or maybe you're the guy that's always critical of something out there. Once you have established a certain set audience, it's very hard then to do a 180 or separate yourself from that audience that you've created and nurtured.
Sure.
Yeah. And I've seen that before with people.
Yep.
Where it's like, oh, I don't know why my audience reacted to me doing this certain video. When it's like, well, you've done other angry videos before criticizing a certain sort of aspect, and now that you've kind of shied away from that and your audience is mad of it, maybe because that's the audience you attracted.
Yeah.
You've grown up with that audience. They're the ones that supported you. You can't all of a sudden divorce yourself from the audience and expect it to be okay. You sort of make your bed lie in
it. You attract a shitty audience, they're going to be shitty people to you eventually. They're not
potentially.
They're not just being nice to you.
Or you can they won't turn against you, but you know then you have to cater to an audience.
Right. Yeah, there's one of those.
And what's gotten us into quote unquote trouble is that we don't cater with our stuff. If we catered, we could be as big as angry gamers. We know what we could say to guard an audience, but we have what's called integrity. So we say what's more on our minds and what we want and really what our true opinions and values are, which usually don't waver to what an audience might want to hear, unfortunately. And there are certain audiences that are on Twitter versus Facebook versus YouTube versus podcasts. There are entirely different swaths of people that
sure.
gravitate towards certain platforms. And what works towards one may not work for another.
Yep.
Not saying there aren't people on YouTube, obviously there's people on YouTube that enjoy our content, but there's also people on YouTube that enjoy other types of content that we won't cater towards as well. And that's just the reality of how the business works. So when people say, like, well, you know, why is, you know, the channel isn't growing or you're losing subscribers because people spotlight your pain, it's like, well, that's expected at some point. It just is. And you got to be cool with that. Or else you just start pandering and create a fake persona. And then you see your views go up, but then you have no soul eventually.
No soul.
Because like I said in that article, people were like, yeah, this isn't really me. If it's not really you and you're putting out content that doesn't contain your values, I couldn't live myself doing that personally. Maybe you can, I can't.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying.
You do what you do to get by, obviously. I'm not judging that, but I couldn't live myself doing that.
Yeah. There's a persona that keeps you separate from, you know, work and business, or separate from life. And then there's just this fucking out of control rageaholic persona. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to bite you in the ass. All right.
That's it for the CU podcast. Again, I'll be at too many games this weekend.
Going to get friendlies?
Oh, God, am I going to get friendlies? Is that even a question? There's a friendlies about, like, 6 minutes from my parents' house.
Nice.
Roughly, there's one. I'm like, that's fate. So last year I showed up about 5 minutes before they were closing.
Yeah, now, I remember hearing about that.
And I was just asking, I even asked, like, is this a franchise? How does this work? Like, I think some are owned by the corporate and some are franchises. I think that was a franchise. And I'm looking at Friendly's. I'm like, God, they got to, I don't know. They know they've closed a ton of them. They'll always have some that survive in certain areas, but...
Yeah, I heard there was a whole bunch of ones that just closed again recently, which is crazy because like 4 years ago, I think we were talking about one that was about to open or something.
Well, it was like the high tech Friendlies.
Yeah.
Remember? It was like, oh, we got USB chargers at our tables. We're stepping into the late 2000s now. But the Friendlies I went to, the decor was out. The few that I've been to, when I go back to the ones in Jersey and Pennsylvania, they haven't been updated since like the early like 83.
Well, someone told me that the last one in Buffalo closed down, and that's funny to me because I did not know there was a last one left in Buffalo to close.
This is becoming a Friendlies conversation. How many Friendlies are left in here? Friendly, Friendlies, in the summertime. I'm going to guess there's about 75 left in the U.S., but let's just see. Where to buy menu locations. And you can. It's right. You can go into stores. If you go to the East Coast, there's Friendlies ice cream stocked.
Yeah.
So it's like Carvel. Looks like there's probably between 80 and 100. I'm trying to, let's see, how to put in my zip code, my old zip code. There used to be one about 15 minutes away, and boy, did I take that for granted as a kid.
Yeah.
Right? Even in my 20s, I took that for granted. In New Jersey, there are how many left in Jersey? There's only three left.
Three.
Metuchen, Clark, and Old Bridge. At some point, there probably used to be about 25.
Sure.
Probably like 25, 30 years ago. There's three left in Jersey. Is that right? Or is it within a certain mileage of me? That can't be right. There's got to be more than
three. I'm looking at this map. It looks like there's a lot more.
There's got to be more than three in Jersey. Yeah, I'm looking at the same thing. Okay, I apologize. There's more than three.
Apparently, there's three in Florida.
Oh, okay. There's a couple in South Carolina, North Carolina. Yeah, there's none in Canada. We haven't broken through there yet.
I want a Reese's Cup.
The Reese's Peanut Butter Cup Sunday?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. In Jersey, there's about, looks like 15 to 20 left at least. Okay. There's a decent amount left. There's probably over 100, it looks like. Or about 100. Okay. But they're closing still.
Stay with us, Friendlies.
There's a ton on Long Island. Well, we're going to be in Long Island.
Yeah. Yeah, we will be in Long Island.
Retro Gaming Expo. What do you think I was saying?
Yeah, the weekend of August 10th and 11th.
We're going to be there. Absolutely.
Come see us.
There's any in Maine? We're just talking about Friendlies now. There's a few in Maine. There's a handful in Vermont. There's about seven in Vermont. There's actually not a huge amount in New York besides Long Island. Pennsylvania and New Jersey, that's where they're at. Couple in Maryland, it looks like. Couple in Delaware. I always forget Delaware's a state. We all do. And any in Rhode Island? Yeah, there's some in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I've actually ever been in Rhode Island before. I'm sorry, this is going off the rails.
So anyways, that was a good podcast.
The whole point is this. I'm going to get the small, not the large, peanut butter cup sundae. I don't care that it's only 50 cents more. I can't eat it. I can't eat the large anymore. It's ridiculous.
It's massive.
Peanut butter cup sundae might be the best thing ever. I have gift cards. Someone sent me gift cards in the mail last year. I'll bring that.
Nice.
So that'll be a Too Many Games. If you're part of the crew, the all-you-can-eat sushi crew, if you're lucky enough to be part of the all-you-can-eat sushi / Friendlies ice cream crew, maybe Pat will treat you this year. We'll see. All right, for Ian Ferguson.
For me.
I'm Pat Contrary. We're going to get going, and we'll see you later.
Bye.